So, thanks for joining me again. My guest, or my friend, I should say, more than my guest, is a writer, producer. She produced a documentary feature, Above and Beyond, in 2014 and is developing it now as a narrative feature film. She is executive producer of Who Will Write Our History? We'll talk about that with director Roberta Grossman, and executive produced On the Map with Danny Menken, who is also on my channel. And she also was consultant on the Oscar-winning documentary Chernobyl Heart. And Chernobyl is something that we have in common, which we will talk about right away. That's how we met. She executive produced Elusive Justice, The Search for Nazi War Criminals, which aired nationally on PBS, as well as Mimi and Donna, which was chosen as one of the best TV shows of 2015 by the New York Times. Before creating and producing Above and Beyond, she produced a project for the Israeli government, Celebrities Salute Israel's 60th, which was featured in Times Square on the NASDAQ screens for 1 month. She grew up surrounded by the film industry, where she worked on her brother Stephen's early films. I think you're getting a hint maybe who I'm talking about. She attended Arizona State University, UCLA, and after moving to New York, studied film at Sarah Lawrence College and the New School in New York. I'm talking about my dear, dear friend, Nancy Spielberg. Can I eat add on hyphenated cats?
You better, otherwise I'm in trouble.
Nancy, thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Mike. You know, I'm always with you, one way or another, right?
Yeah. We have a bond which started in 19, was it 95 or 6? 95, I think.
The end of 95. Yes, I think so, yeah. Yep.
And, you know, sometimes out of tragedy comes an enormous friendship and a bond. I had just lost my first wife, may she rest in peace, Edie. And I went to a fundraiser for Children of Chernobyl.
Right.
I don't remember who invited me because we didn't know each other at that time. It was at... was it at Christie's?
Christie's.
Yeah. Wow. And there you were sponsoring it, I guess you could call. And I met you. It was a wonderful affair, a lot of people. And at that time, I was introduced to a petite woman who lit up my life. I'm going to get very emotional now, because we bonded so immediately. There was something that I didn't know even at the time, but we had this in common that she had just lost her husband.
Right.
I think almost at the same time. And we started talking, and... we never stopped.
You know, it's funny because, by the way.
Oh, gosh. Oh.
I mean, look at this. Oh. The two of you locked blue eyes. It was blue eyes to blue eyes. And there was like this, almost like this force field around the two of you and a connection. You were so tight and together and sharing. And boy, till her last days, That's how you were. You know, it was pretty incredible. And my mom didn't like, I mean, she liked people. She didn't love a lot of people. She loved you.
Well, obviously, we're talking about your mom, about Leah.
Yeah.
I used to call her Leila because her Hebrew name was Leah. And that was my, interestingly enough, my mother's name was Leah.
Oh,
yes.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
So I called her Leila. And Tziona, my darling Tziona, who I was so fortunate to meet after I lost my first wife. And we've been together ever since. And Tziona and I, we used to spend time with Leah whenever we could.
Right.
You were generous enough to invite me to her 80th birthday.
You were at many more than just the 80th.
Yeah, sure.
Did you perform at the 80th? Because you were always, I think we always had you performing. We made you get up and sing your favorite songs.
Yeah. Yes. Well, the 80th was at that wonderful Italian
restaurant. Yeah.
On Westwood Boulevard.
I think so. Yeah. We made it kosher.
Oh, you took it over and koshered it. I remember so many friends were there. Kirk Douglas was there with his wife as well. That's when I met him. And we decided that I wanted to sing something that meant something to all of you. And it turned out it was a song called Yes, My Darling Daughter, which I learned, and I sang that for the first time. And I still have the gifts from that birthday. A couple of bottles of wine.
So do I actually.
Still have them.
With her face on it, don't drink it. I think it's really not good anymore. And it has her face on the label, and it says,
yes,
no wine before it's time, but it's time.
Yeah. And that little bobblehead, the little doll. Yeah. And there was I think it was like a lollipop or something as well. I mean, right. And unfortunately, we don't have Leela physically with us, but she is constantly, you know, in my thoughts, in my mind, and she has inserted herself so much in my life, and I'm so grateful for that. And that's how my friendship with you and your family has been for all these years. So I'm, we're so lucky to have had
her. We are, and I feel her with me all the time. In fact, I sometimes blame her for some of the idiosyncrasies or crazy things I do or impulsiveness. You know, I mean, one time I was somewhere flying. I was like online on the plane and I saw a picture of like a denim. My mother always wore denim, white Peter Pan collars. Big diamonds, but always like jeans. And I saw a denim sequined jacket and I was like, oh my God, I have to have that. And I literally landed in LA, went to Neiman's, bought it. It was a ridiculous amount of money. And I sent a picture to my husband, said, my mother made me do this. Because my mother would have bought that. So I had to buy it because it reminded me. So I use her sometimes, but she guides me. She really guides me, even with the restaurant that, you know, we kept it open to honor her, the Milky Way.
Milky Way.
And We you know, modernized it a little bit, but we made it mom. It's denim. It's pictures of her everywhere. We actually took away a lot of the celebrity shots, you know? I mean, we have you with her on the wall. But somewhere. We took away, like, I think we took away Bill Clinton and Tom Cruise and those guys. We cleared the way because it's mom. And we really wanted to welcome people and to teach people who my mom was and for us to be able to sit there and feel her presence. So it was a very tough loss. Yeah.
For all of you in Los Angeles, and for those who will visit ultimately Los Angeles when this this pandemic is at some point over, you must visit the Milky Way. It's on Pico Boulevard, and it's kosher, and it's dairy, and it's delicious.
Yes.
And you should visit. Is it open now?
Just for takeout.
For takeout.
Right now, no in dining.
Right.
So just okay. Right now it's no in dining. It's just takeout.
Tell me, how are you coping? I mean, I ask all my friends because we are in the middle of this pandemic. Not only in the middle, but it seems that unfortunately people haven't been listening, haven't been following the science. And it's spreading even more now. We're in the middle of, almost the middle of July.
Yeah.
And it's coming, you know, there's a spike. And so, gosh, what's going to happen?
You know, it's funny. If someone had said to me that, because I'm sort of a Spilkes, kind of on the go, always running, and I was traveling back and forth, New York, LA, like every month. If someone had said to me, you're going to have to stay home for like 5 months, I would have said, are you out of your mind? I can't do that. The truth is, I can do it. We can all do it. You find ways, you see new ways to be creative, you stay productive, you try to stay positive, you end up finding appreciation in things around you that you've stopped noticing, and now you have time to notice them. And I think focusing that, the toughest thing for me is not seeing Jessica, my daughter who's in Israel, Melissa, my daughter who's in LA, seeing my dad who's 103 in LA. That is my yearning. But thank God for Zoom. We've all become experts on, even my dad FaceTimes with us. And seeing a face and hearing a voice just helps strengthen you.
You know, it's a comfort, but, you know, I cannot hug my grandkids.
I know.
You know, and I see them, and every once in a while, we'll, you know, they'll come up and we'll take walks from afar.
Right.
But they're growing up. They're 8, and they, you know, and I want to hug them. I want to physically, and it's frustrating. And, you know, sure, I agree. You know, I'm doing things like what I'm doing now.
Right.
I decided, you know, instead of getting up every morning and not seeing anything on my calendar, so what's my incentive in the morning? You know, we are storytellers. That's what we do. And we want to tell stories. So how do we do it in this new reality? So there are ways. There are some positive things that have come out of it. I have to tell you, though, that Siona said to me the other day that she thinks it may be a blessing that Lee did not have to go through this.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine how she would have sit back and taken this.
Not well, because my mom was so many things and very strong in many ways, but her Achilles heel was not the pain, it was the fear of. So it's fear that would cripple her. And the anxiety, plus she was so into people.
Right.
She had to be in that restaurant every single day. She is not a homebody. She would never sit, like the most she would sit at home would be watch Judge Judy for half an hour, then go back to the restaurant to work. But don't you often think, what I keep thinking about is our families that came from Eastern Europe or before the Holocaust, after the Holocaust, those that ventured to America, like my grandparents in the early 1900s, didn't think they may see their families again. They were leaving family behind. There are hardships that none of us know anything about. And if we can take a lesson from anything of finding our resilience, and I always say that Jewish people, you know, resilience should be our middle name. We got to figure, we have to be resilient because there's so many ways that, you know, things work against us. It's not just the Jewish people now, obviously. But I have to figure out that however bad we think we have it, it could be worse. I'm always scared to say that. Doesn't mean we should be complacent, but I have to, you have to find your positive kernels to keep you getting out of bed every day.
Well, you know? Not only that, but I consider us blessed. We are the lucky ones. When you see what's going on in the rest of the country and the rest of the world, for the people who are not as fortunate as we are, who can't even feed their families, I mean, are online for hours and hours just to get some food, the basics. So I think we need to say, you know, Baruch Hashem, you know,
yes,
and thank the Lord or whoever it is for everything that we are blessed with, and try and pay it forward, as you say, you know, as try and help. And that's what we do.
Yeah.
That's in our tradition, you know, tikkun olam, try and help as much as we can, and hope that this will at some point, it will at some point somehow balance out, I hope. I think, you know, I hate to be pragmatic, but I think it's going to be with us for quite a while. And
I said that to my kids because I don't want them to lose hope, because, you know, Jessica is a performer also, which means she needs gigs. And if nothing's really in production, or she also sings and she can't do concerts, trying to figure it out. Melissa works in the equestrian world. There haven't been horse shows. Everybody's affected. Everybody's affected. But I keep saying to them, you know what? Think of February as the day that you may be able to unlock the door. I know that may sound extreme, but think in the long term that this is not two more weeks. We need patience. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people that have no patience. You know, Israel is in a worse situation right now, as is Los Angeles. California is terrible. And, I feel like I sound old when I say I'm going to blame the young people because they're not taking it seriously. But, you know, a lot of the people that are just anxious to get out there and socialize are not doing it wisely.
Well, as you said, you know, we, the Jewish people, unfortunately, went through, when I speak to, you know, I have a dear friend who's going to be 100. She's a Holocaust survivor. And she says to me, you know, this is nothing compared to what we went through. And we're still here, and she's a tough one. That's really, you know, maybe we should simply remember the old saying, and this too shall pass, hopefully.
Right.
But we have to, you know, adjust ourselves to a new way of life. It will never be the same that it was before, and hopefully it'll be different, but maybe it may be better. And science is always advancing and giving us new possibilities. Speaking of the Holocaust, your documentary is so magnificent that you produced, I hope that it's being streamed right now because the cinemas are not functioning. What's happening with it? Is there...
That's Hula Rider History, which was written and directed by Roberta Grossman, who directed Above and Beyond with me. Right. And we had a very robust festival. It was aired on Discovery Networks globally, and it is still being screened through Good Docs, and I think you can even go online and screen it. A lot of the schools are asking for it, and mostly schools that are looking for important programming, and there's very little funds, mostly now. You know, you're hearing other words about funding being cut to schools. We won't get into that, but we make a huge effort to not just make a film, but to distribute the film. And it's not dollar, the bottom line is not dollars with us, it's eyeballs. So this is a time, it's interesting, because you spoke to Danny Menken, I think, as well.
Oh yeah, Danny's up on the channel as well.
Right, so it's really an interesting time that instead of being in film festivals where you are limited by the number of seats in a theater, you can only have 300 or 400 people, you can have a global opening of a film. You can stream a film globally and reach that many more people. And the point of Hula Rider History is to teach a lesson, to share the stories, and to honor and respect the people that died writing their stories, wanting to tell the truth, knowing they wouldn't survive. And, you know, there's something to be said for making sure the truth gets through today with all the quotes about, you know, fake news, which was one of Hitler's favorite statements.
Oh, gosh.
By the way. Yeah.
Oh, don't get me started.
Yeah, okay, we won't go that way. So it is available, and I should probably know exactly where it is available. But I know if you go on, like, katahdin.org, the website, or you can go to whowriterhistory.com, it shows you how to.
I'll put that up on the screen, and also we'll try and put a little teaser or a trailer on for it.
Okay.
Somewhere, years ago, there was a mother who knew that her son was the cleverest, the most talented, the most beautiful. And now the brightest and most beautiful child in the world lies in a strange street. And his name isn't even known.
We should have seen the worst coming. But we did not want to know the truth. We did not want to see it.
Does the world know about our suffering?
Emmanuel Ringelblum understood that he had a story to tell, and it was the most important story he would ever have to tell.
Almost all the photography that we have was taken by the German propaganda unit.
Will the Germans write our history, or will we write our history?
Let the witness be our writing.
Their goal was to write the history of the war from the Jewish perspective. And there was no time to lose.
The worst scenario was in the process of happening.
Writing becomes the only recourse. That was the ultimate act of defiance.
You don't really need guns to fight. You could fight with paper and pen.
This is what made this collection of documents so absolutely unique.
One thing is clear to all of us. Our devotion and constant terror have not been in vain.
Among those taken away was Rabbi Uberman.
Geli Sexton.
Israel Lichtenstein.
Leib Golden.
Abraham Levin.
Halina.
Emmanuel Ringelblum.
Remember, my name is Nahum Gazevich.
I am writing this as a witness.
Let me ask you what you hear from we're talking about the positive things that we've gotten on the one hand, that we can access so many more people than we could before,
right?
Worldwide, reach so many just by doing the new technology like Zoom or but it's taking a big toll on the industry, on our industry, both here in California and on the East Coast. Broadway, which I love and I've worked on so many times and I miss, has been closed for 5 months completely.
Will be closed until January.
And will not open till January 2021. Thousands and thousands of talented people, especially young people, who come to New York every year to try and make it in off-Broadway, off-Broadway, on-Broadway, and have been sidelined now and don't even have the ability to take on side jobs like waitresses or bartenders,
right?
Because that's not available either. And it's tragic. It really is. The Actors Fund is a wonderful organization that I recommend for people who want to help to support these people. But it's actors and dancers and choreographers and directors and some of the theaters. I did a schmooze with Manny Eisenberg, one of our greatest producers. And Manny thinks that many companies won't even return next year. They won't be able to. So the same thing out here on the coast in California in the film industry. What do you hear? Do you hear anything from Steven? What's happening there? How is it affecting his ability to produce and to tell stories?
Well, the truth is I've been talking to him, but not about anything to do with the industry. We just sort of share, you know, our family things. He was locked down in his home in LA for a long time. I know that DreamWorks is still working on development, which this is actually a great time to develop projects,
true,
to write projects, to Zoom it. As far as production goes, I know that there were guidelines that were released in LA a couple of weeks ago that were very complicated, like everybody on the set with a mask except the actor. But because of all the unions involved, that's going to be tough. So, you know, the studios are very deep pockets. They're probably working even more furiously than the rest of us to figure out how to get back to some way to monetize all the money that they've dumped into films. Because how do you recoup a $50 million, $100 million film? How do you recoup it in streaming? It's not easy. And when theaters do start back, they're going to start back at a third or a half capacity. So, and as much as we all love drive-ins, nobody has real estate, you know, so there's so many problems. It just like compiles. And I don't really know what's going to happen. I didn't even ask Steve what will happen with West Side Story, which is supposed to be released on his birthday, December 18th. And you can only hope that we will be able to be in a theater and have an experience on a big screen and beautiful sound, you know, so that you can immerse yourself. So I really don't know. Like, I didn't get it from that horse's mouth. I just hear from everybody in general.
But again, you know, we'll adapt. Like, for example, Hamilton.
Right.
They were going to release this feature that they did, a marvelous feature, next year. And
right.
They decided in the end, Disney, this is the right time to do it. And most people have big screens now, big screen TVs.
Right.
And we watched it the other night, and it is magnificent. Obviously,
right.
If we had seen it, been able to see it in a theater, you know, in the atmosphere, in the dark with other people and share the experience on a huge screen, but it's still very rewarding. So that may be the direction we're going. We'll see.
Right.
Tell me what are your immediate plans? Are you staying home? Can you travel? How's Shimmy? How is he doing?
Shimmy is great. My dog is also very happy that we're home. You know, right now I don't want to go anywhere. I mean, the first place I'll probably go is LA and then Israel when we can. We have a home in both places. I mean, I'm really dying to get to Jerusalem, but not yet. You know, one of the hardest things about all of this is to think that I'm in that elderly category, and nobody told me that before. You know, like, suddenly over 60 means you're in the elderly category, and that was a wake up call, I gotta tell you. So
although Nancy, today that's not the case anymore. I mean, the average coronavirus is actually affecting younger people. It's
right.
Not the 65 and over anymore. It's the
right.
35 and the 25, and some children are unfortunately passing away. So it's not, and we don't know, we still don't know anything about this.
I know.
Still,
my nephew had a horrible case, and he's 27 years old, healthy kid.
Okay.
So he was in ICU for 14 days. He is still at home convalescing, still needs oxygen, and this is about 6 weeks later. He's slowly building up his strength. He had cardiac issues, pulmonary issues, gastro issues. So hopefully most of it will reverse itself, because he is a young body. And he was given remdesivir,
right,
which had just been approved. So that Tuesday that the remdesivir was sent out, he had been in ICU from the Thursday before, was not on a ventilator, but was on heavy oxygen, the other mask. And you know what? He's the most optimistic guy, because he feels great now. Knowing how he felt, he feels great, and he will slowly build his strength back. So that is super important. But you know, when you see somebody close to you, it scares you into good behavior even more so. And I think we don't social do anything. Like, I know a lot of people do their social backyard things. We're not doing anything. I love you from afar through a screen, and that's the way I want it. I walk a lot. I walk with the dog, but I just don't walk with anybody.
We
only
well,
four legs.
People should, that quote that somebody sent me a little while ago: if you hate a mask, you're gonna love the ventilator.
Yeah.
So you know, unless people see it, like you said, you saw someone close to you.
Very
people
scary.
Who haven't seen it still don't get it.
I know.
Please, let's all stay. The bottom line is not to get it.
Right.
Not to get it. That's the whole thing. And it's common sense, for God's sake.
I know.
Just common sense. Do
it
what
is.
You're supposed to do.
I think I'm disappointed in the amount of anger that I feel when I see strangers walking by me without masks. And I mean, they don't even have one around their neck. I just want to yell at them. I actually did yell at a group. I did yell. And I'm, you know, sort of like a little petite thing. And I was like, where's your mask? And it was a whole bunch of people walking across the road. So I had to get past them in my neighborhood. And the young woman said, we don't have any available. And I'm thinking, this is in the beginning. I'm wearing a bandana. Don't tell me you don't have a beautiful little scarf you can put over your nose. And I couldn't believe I blurted it out. And I said, well, you're making us all feel very uncomfortable. I've been picking fights with people without masks. But I, you know, it just, it's scary.
Nancy, people learn by example.
Children
learn by example. The best way, you know, to educate children is by example. And we don't have an example right now.
No.
We don't have leadership from the top. And that's the problem. And until we get leadership, we are leaderless and we're floundering. And most people will take that as an example who have that hard-headed attitude. And if he's not doing it, why should I? And that is quite a big chunk of our nation. And
that is a big problem.
Well, we have 4 months to go, and we have to do the right thing.
Yep.
We can go on and on and on. I love you, but I know you want to get into the pool and cool off a little bit. Show me what did the t-shirt say?
When my brother started to make, it says E.T. and Me.
Oh, E.T. and Me, yeah.
When my brother made Jaws, right after Jaws, a whole bunch of copycat films came out. So then when he started to produce his other films, he would do them under like Shushu, you know, very secretive. So Close Encounters was under a code name. You had to have a picture. This is picture ID. This is a long time ago. I think that was 1977.
You're right.
And called CE3K. We always got the cast and crew t-shirts. So then when he made E.T., when he was filming E.T., originally it was called A Boy's Life, because he didn't want anybody else to catch on. And then they named it E.T. and Me. So this was like I actually have old t-shirts. I don't know when E.T. came out, but this is a long time ago. I had my Jaws t-shirt on. I had a 45-year-old t-shirt I was wearing. I'm pulling all the stuff out of the closet because why wear it, you know, the other things?
We get a chance we get a chance to take all the old stuff and look through stuff that we've accumulated.
I know.
We don't need anymore. And this is giving us a chance to do that. By the way, there was a wonderful article in this past Sunday New York Times in the art section, which is getting thinner and thinner because of lack of shows to cover. But there was a great article about Jaws. I can't believe that it was so many. It was like
1975.
Wow, unbelievable.
It came out the year my sister and I went to Israel right after Jaws came out. It came out, I think, in June or July. August, we went to Israel. We went to a kibbutz. And I'll never forget, the first trip they took us on was to the Sinai. And we went to Eilat, and then we went to Ras Muhammad, which is now given back to Egypt.
Sure.
And I remember snorkeling with another guy, and I saw this huge shark. Now, I read Peter Benchley's book. I read the script. I was on set with Jaws. I know what you're not supposed to do. You're not supposed to thrash around and scream like a sissy. So the minute I saw a shark under me, what do? I ripped off my snorkel mask. I started screaming and thrashing around. And the guy that was with me was trying to shush me. And you're right by the corals. You know, at Ras Muhammad, you can walk way out in the water on coral.
Oh, I dove there many times with the sharks.
Yeah, so I got out of there fast. In the meantime, it was a sand shark, which is probably like harmless, 3 foot. But, you know, I've never swam with a fish that big. And that was it. That was it. That was 1975. And I just saw headlines. You know, I saw the headlines Achayot Spielberg and the Karish, like the Spielberg sisters eaten by a shark. And because it was shark mania that summer.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Well,
so the article, I think, was that Jaws was playing, and it was one of the biggest box office now in like movie theaters and stuff. I mean, it made like $500,000 in movie theater sales or whatever's happening in the COVID environment in re-release. So that was the big news.
Right. And it really, it initiated the summer blockbusters. That was the start of it all.
Right. I know.
I'm going to ask you the question that I ask all my friends towards the end of our shmooze. If I were to ask you, who is the person, one individual, that inspired you or your life or your career, your life basically, who would it be?
It probably would be my, there really are three, but it would probably be my mom. I would say my mom first, because her attitude in life was always the cup is half full.
Yes.
It is never, I don't have. It's like, look at my bounty. Hmm. Look at the blessings I have. She used to say, look at me, Leia Fagel Posner. And I got a little blue box from Tiffany's from my son. Look at the Schmendrick Leia Fagel Posner. My mother used to get excited about a new pair of Ked sneakers for $20. And so it's always getting, finding that thrill and looking at life like that. And she also used to say the Scarlett O'Hara favorite, famous line of, I'll think about that tomorrow. Like today, I'm going to live my life and enjoy it. So sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. But I think that she gave me a positive attitude. But I do have to say, because I can't answer that just by itself, is my father and my husband, who both are incredibly responsible, and they feel like they have to take care of a lot of people. They feel that they carry the weight in many ways, and they do things to help a lot of people. And so that has taught me that. I think I learned more tzedakah from Shimon, my husband, who sometimes I want to shoot him when he goes, no, I'm doing this for so-and-so. I was like, are you crazy? You know, it's like they mentioned once something and all of a sudden you're going to go in search of it and make and send it to, because he just thinks of other people to the nth degree. But I try to learn how to be that considerate to other people as well. Not always there, but I'm trying. So it is tough. I would say my mom just probably gives me the joy to live. Mm. And that with that, you can just do about anything.
She did. She lived that way.
Yeah, she did.
She did live that way.
She taught us all. And to hold on, you got to hold on to that little bit of that childlike innocence, just a little, because that's a little bit of a happy pill.
But you're born with that, Nancy. It's not
something
you can do. It's something that you're born with. It's in the genes. Some people
got good genes.
Some people just have that, and they radiate it. And that's how we first met. There was a chemistry there between us, and it never went away. It was always there. We may not have seen each other very often, but it was always there. So she's watching over all of us. God bless her. She's
so happy we're playing nicely.
Yes. Yeah. And I leave you the way I always leave my my talks and my schmoozes with my motto. And my motto is carpe diem. Seize the day.
Yes. Amen.
That's what we will always need to do. Seize the day. Thank you so much, Nancy. I love you,
Mike. You
stay safe. And we'll see each other in person.
Yes. We're going to hug.
Yes.
It'll be so interesting.
Love you. And thank you, folks, for joining us. See you next time. Bye.